Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week, we talk about something that pops up often in life after you transition, and for lack of a better term, I'm going to call it discriminatory bureaucracy. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the person who's had to witness all the discriminatory bureaucracy I've experienced firsthand, Susan Bridges.
Hello.
Our guest this week is Magdalene Visaggio, a comics writer, musician, and prose author. Her work includes the Eisner-nominated Kim and Kim, Vagrant Queen, Eternity Girl, and the first officially licensed Rocky Horror Picture Show sequel. She holds a background in ethics and moral theology from Seton Hall and is currently at work on projects across comics, prose, fiction, and theater. Welcome, Mags.
Hi, Mag.
Hi. So I think most people are probably familiar with your comics work. So I wanted to start by asking how you got into the industry and what drew you to that medium.
I've just been making comics since I was 8 years old.
Wow.
My dad got me my first comic. It was some couple of random issues of Superman that he picked up at a truck stop.
Great place to start, though.
And I was just hooked. I actually came into comics like as a reader right during Death and Return of Superman and Reign of Superman.
Yeah, so me too.
So my Superman has a mullet. Like that doesn't look weird to me. That's the first super. That's kind of my primary experience. Like my root Superman is cool 90s Superman with the hair.
Yeah.
And
that triangle era was so good, though.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But X-Men, the cartoon came out, and I quickly ended up a Marvel reader and kind of fell off DC for a very long time, which is funny because they've given me most of my mainstream work. Not that I've had very much. I started taking my comics work really seriously. And about 2012, I always wanted to be a comics writer. And even when I was working on developing other stories, it was always in the back of my head. Yeah, but this could be a comic. And so yeah. 2012, I started just really trying to build my craft. And just there's this Ira Glass video that kind of just changed my life, where he's just talking about how hard it is to get past the stage where you suck at what you do and you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, the reason you want to get into whatever it is that you want to do is because you have this killer taste, and your taste is good enough to know that you're not meeting it. And that's really discouraging. And so you have to accept that you're gonna suck, and you're gonna suck bad. And that just blew my mind. And it got me to the point where I could start putting the work in to grow. I'm like, oh, I can just, it's okay if the things aren't capital G genius, which was always the standard I held myself to. Was
sure.
I have to be I'm in my 20s. I need to be an earth shattering genius. Meanwhile, I had no work with which I had developed my craft. Like I was one of those writers who didn't write. I started things and didn't finish them.
Yeah.
I'd spend all my time being like, oh, I'm a writer. And then I wouldn't actually put anything out. So I started working in 2015. This was actually, I need back up a little bit. So writing comics helped me transition.
That's amazing.
Because really it's writing that helped me transition. Because when I started taking my craft seriously, I started to have to really think about, okay, well, what's wrong with the work I've been doing? And so much of it was just, it just was so didactic and preachy. Like, I would come in with like a philosophical idea to articulate and build a story around it. And it would just be boring. And I'm like, okay. And none of this stuff is like even really emotionally engaging me. So I started exploring a little bit more and I started reading a lot more comics. Like I've always been reading comics, although it's at this point I'm in the middle of a gap. But I've always been reading comics and I started like expanding my palette out and reading kind of stuff I hadn't read before. And I realized that if I wanted to make comics, I needed to start listening to myself about the kinds of stories I wanted to tell. And once you start listening to yourself in one thing, well, you sort of have to, it just sort of starts knocking down doors. Because I feel like you can't really do meaningful writing if you are not being, if you're not letting yourself access yourself.
Yeah.
And so once I started, it all just kind of started to fall apart. And so it was actually, writing Kim and Kim kind of started as this, first it was just kind of an attempt to write, because I was contemplating transition at that point. But I was so terrified and I started thinking, okay, well, I'm so sorry. I keep to back up a little bit further.
That's okay.
I first tried to transition in 2011 and I went on for about 3 months before I started to be like, oh, this is like feeling like this is inhaling every other part of my life. And that really freaked me out because I'd always heard, you know, all those people being like, why do like weird people let that become their entire personality? And I didn't want that. And I didn't know how to balance it because I had spent so little time cultivating other parts of myself outside of my religion. So when I realized I needed to transition again and try it again, I was still really scared of that. And so I started working on Kim and Kim originally as like, I want to make something with a trans character where that's not the point of the character. I just want to do a character who has other stuff going on.
Yeah,
because that'll tell me that I can be a trans person and an entire person. Joke's on me because I wrote Kim Quatro, who is absolutely not an entire person. She's just a disaster. Just a walking disaster. But working on that taught me I need to rewind just a little bit. The other problem with my writing all through like my 20s and everything was I would tend to get really caught up on like plot detail and making sure I was plugging every single plot hole and trying to construct the world so thoroughly in advance instead of just starting from the perspective of what's something I would really enjoy. So for Kim and Kim, I had this conscious attitude of I'm going to say yes to every single stupid idea. I'm not going to say no to any of my ideas. Like if I think something would be fun on the page, I'm going to do it on the page. And so it's a little bit of an uneven book, but it has this kind of like manic Looney Tunes energy that you just couldn't really find in comics in 2015. And you certainly weren't seeing the kind of trans representation I was doing. And I feel like that was a big part of why the book got picked up in the first place.
Sure.
I don't know if that answers your question. I guess I've just been, comics have always been something I've been making. And in 2015, I finally got someone to give me some money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I love the medium because it's so unique and it's so different. And, you know, we write in a lot of mediums. And to me, comics is the most difficult one to write in. And I think once you know how to write comics, it makes you a better writer at all those other mediums because they're not that difficult.
I disagree.
Really? Okay.
Comics, I find comics a breeze. I love writing comics. I'm fluent in comics. It is my native writing language. I've been writing a prose novel for 5 freaking years, and it's maddening because here's what comics gives me that prose doesn't, and that's limits. I love the page as narrative unit, which does not exist in prose.
Yeah.
Pagination can be anything because the chapter and the paragraph, those are the narrative units. And so in my early drafts on my novel, it's trans literary horror novel. I could just do whatever I wanted without regard for space or what the reader is looking at.
Or what an artist would have to draw. Yeah.
Not just what an artist would have to draw. I could write things that aren't drawable.
Sure. Yeah.
Like I could just have just extended digressions that are super internal. I can change lanes at the drop of a hat in ways you can't do in comics. And those are not native skills of mine.
Okay.
So that's stuff I've really had to learn. Like, when I first showed my first draft to my old agent, I got these notes back that were like, you need a little bit of focus. You are throwing way too much at the reader. And then you just get stuck doing nothing for pages and pages and pages and pages. Because I don't have the natural structure of a page as a narrative unit with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it, in almost every case, needs to force the reader to want to read the next page. And
right.
Those techniques together give me so much structure and rhythm that I have had a much harder time finding in prose, where I can be way more self-indulgent without even realizing I'm being that self-indulgent.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's wild how differently different writers approach different mediums and things. Because, like, I find the lack of structure in, like, prose to be much easier to write through because I don't have to worry about the page turn. I don't have to worry about, is this going to be too many panels per page? Like, those constraints in comics make it more difficult for me, but they make it easier for you, and that's just cool. I love that.
My favorite thing about comics as a medium, I've mentioned this on probably every podcast I've ever done where I've talked about comics as a medium. It's that time is a function of space.
Yeah.
And that means you can speed it up and contract it. You can make things happen very quickly or excruciatingly slowly. And what's so interesting is just the way that you do it on the page also affects whether the thing you're doing is, you're like slowing down, is even reading as slow. Because if you're doing it, and I won't say right, but there are techniques,
sure,
that involve collaborating with the artist that allow that decompression to move so fast. And to just kind of feel like a zoom in and or a bullet time instead of a slowdown. And I love that work. They're one of my favorite. I can't remember the term for it. There's a term for the specific kind of panel where you show a static scene, but the character is moving through that scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not something you can do in prose.
Right.
That's not something you can do in film. I really think very visually as a writer.
Yeah.
So comics feel just much more native to me. It's also I've really enjoyed the work I've done in film and TV for the same reason, because it lets me flex those same muscles, but in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Prose though, prose is so hard. I'm like, I'm jiving with music, I'm jiving with theater. Prose, which is the only place where I can do this project, Long Island Baby, it can't work anywhere else. And it is just crushing how much it demands of me.
Yeah, it's just so many words compared to scripts too. So
yeah, so many words.
It's too many words.
No, it's not the. It's not even just the number of words. It's the
that's
not
part
having
of it,
the structure of the. I mean, no. It's really not to me, because it can be short. It can be long. It's knowing when to shut up and knowing when not to that I love about comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. For you, what has been the best thing about transitioning?
I'm not sure how to answer that question, because it's like, have the transitioning has been the best part. Like, it's complicated because, well, one, what are we calling transition?
Whatever it means to you. I don't go by any hard definitions. It's different for everyone, you know? So however you want to interpret it.
This feels like overly broad, but
broad.
Sexist jokes, but getting to like be a person.
Yeah.
So I was for many years the sort of person who had to be the smartest one in the room, where smart was my personality, which is not a personality.
Yeah.
Just very much always needed to be the one who was explaining things and who knew the most. And I don't have to do that anymore, you know? And that's something that like I never liked about myself, that I was able to put away, because I'm like, oh, I don't have to have my brain on offer. Like, my brain isn't the reason people, I mean, yes, the brain is where everything in the human personality is, but I mean, like, my intellect, I should say, is not the reason why people spend time with me. They appreciate my intellect, and I am pretty smart, but I have other things to offer and other ways to be, and I can just relax and be around people who just love me because I am now able to, like, understand my own existence. And I'm not having to put up this wall.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, one of the things that I'm still friends with a lot of my friends from college. And one of the things that they told me is that, like, we knew something was off, but we had no idea what. Just, there was clearly something that was making you so unhappy. And you would say the, sometimes the weirdest, most, like, cryptic things. And now I get it. I used to bring up a lot, like, man, you ever notice how, like, women are really pretty and guys are just, like, brutish Hulk and monsters? What's up with that?
What's up with that? So weird.
Yeah, like, who'd want to be that? You know?
Obviously, everyone would prefer to be a lady. That's just science, so.
I'm both mystified that there are people who don't want that and that there are other trans women in the world at all. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, transitioning just so gave me myself. Almost. Can't even say almost. Everything I've ever written that's been worth a damn, I have written post-transition.
Same.
Could get nothing done. I found this old short story I wrote in my senior year of college that I was really proud of. And on the sentence level, I'm still really proud of it. There's a lot of really great lines in there. But it's all just vibes. There's no story because nobody really wants anything because I didn't want anything. And I had no momentum in my life. I was making no choices. I was just letting things happen at me and to me.
Yeah.
And so all my characters and everything I wrote fell into that same thing because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to be a person. I have this novel, this very short unfinished novel. Like, I managed to get like 70 pages into it in college, where that was the reason, is that my main character just kind of sat around and drank and was, you know, miserable and pining after this one perfect girl who was literally everything he wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, Ted was trans, but it was 1921, so there was nothing he could do.
Yeah, yeah. I've looked back at a lot of my pre-transition writing, and I'm like, I was clearly working through gender feelings here, and I had no idea at the time.
I don't understand how nobody in my high school, like, stepped in to say, Are you okay? Because I wrote a lot of stuff about suicide in my creative writing class. Nobody seemed worried.
That's not great.
Back in the day.
Oh.
Things were different.
They sure were.
All right. Well, before we move on into this week's topic, where can people find you online after listening?
I don't know where. I'm not super online anymore. I have a Blue Sky that's at magsvisaggio.com on Blue Sky. I have an Instagram that I think I updated twice last year. But if you want to follow me there, I'm there. That's magsvisags. That's V-I-S-A-G-G-S.
I love that it rhymes, though. That's really
great. Right? It's great. It's super fun. That was actually one of the reasons I picked the name Max.
Oh, I love that.
I was like, it could be like Mags Visags. And I was like, it's like, oh, that's so sick.
It's very cool. Okay, so discriminatory bureaucracy. This sort of thing has cropped up so many times, and in every instance, it has been unintentional, at least as far as I can tell. So just to be clear, I don't think I, or trans people in general, have been the target of policies that were designed to hurt us in these specific instances that I will mention. But there are absolutely laws and programs and policies around the country that are actively designed to intentionally hurt us. With 725 anti-trans bills introduced so far in 2026. And we're only a quarter of the way through the year. See the link in the show notes for the facts on that. These quote-unquote laws are horrible and disgusting, and the goal is to make it impossible for us to exist in society. And we need you, cis friends listening, to stop them. There aren't enough trans people to stop them on our own. See the essay on performative allyship at
TillysTransTuesdays.com.
Episode 8 of this show on performative allyship to false allyship. Episode 35 on proactive allyship. Episode 88 on Trans Politics 1, Stop Tolerating Transphobia. and episode 89 on Trans Politics 2, You Must Vote to Protect Us, for more on the right and wrong ways to truly help trans people. But today, I want to show you how even when there aren't 725 bills from jackass bigots trying to hurt us and legislate us out of existence, the way our society has been set up by and for cisgender people can cause problems you likely never thought about. For the entirety of my medical transition, we have been with Kaiser, who, if you're not familiar, are both a health insurance company and a medical care provider. On the whole, my experience with them during transition has been okay. There have definitely been bumps, but also some bright spots. See episodes 132 and 152 on No Escape from Reminders I'm Trans and No Escape to Some Escape for some of the ways in which Kaiser hasn't been super great, but how individuals within the organization have made a huge positive impact on my experience. I really wish they do informed consent for trans people, but they most certainly do not. See episode 128 on Trans Kids 2, Trans Flight in the Intake Exam, to learn about the incredibly long phone call I had to have with a therapist where I had to prove I was a woman just to access medical transition care. I am now on my third endocrinologist with them because the first was working on 30-year-old information and refused to look at modern studies. When I was worried about access to my HRT during a second Trump term, HRT was discussed in episode 110 of this podcast, the second endo gave me a lecture on federalism and said, if you were female, and that was the end of my talking with her. She lasted all of one appointment. The third and youngest and only non-white of these three has been as good as an endo can be within the restrictions Kaiser puts on them. Although the flip side of that is my primary care physician, while a very nice lady, seems to not have tons of experience with trans folks. And while Kaiser covers laser and electrolysis hair removal, they wouldn't cover it until my testosterone levels dropped below an arbitrary level. Facial hair was one of the worst sources of my gender dysphoria. Listen to episode 59 of this show if you need more on what that is and how awful it can be. I could sign up for gender confirmation surgery on the day the therapist confirmed I was trans because cis people decided that was what was most important to trans people, I guess. Never mind that for me, never ever having to shave my face again was a huge priority, and I didn't get authorization to do something about it until 18 months into my medical transition.
Well, it's not about what we want.
Clearly.
It's about, I mean, that's something that I think about all the time, is just how much of the institutional system just starts from the assumption that transition is a bad outcome. That means that attempt to prevent it failed, and so I guess this is fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always the last resort that they will go to. Like, well, we'll try every other thing first to get you to not be trans. But if you're going to be trans, do it the way we say.
I remember my first bottom surgery surgeon, who I ended up not having surgery with for reasons I may or may not get into. But there was just this, just a battery that I had to sit through of just some of the most humiliating and infantilizing questions.
Yeah.
That's like, are you aware that if you have this, you will no longer be able to naturally procreate? Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
I know where babies come from, and I understand that you will be removing that equipment.
Yeah.
I'm not dumb. And it was like a half hour, and even the person giving me the questions was so apologetic. So, like, God bless her. She was like, okay, I know this is good. This is going to be really embarrassing. I'm really sorry, but, like, I have to ask these. And I thought at the time that that was, like, a law thing. I think it was just Langone, which, sorry, for people can't see. I just did the Italian, you know, brush under the chin, F off gesture.
I know that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like when I got my bottom surgery a couple of years ago at Mount Sinai, I was really expecting to have to go through a lot of the same humiliating experiences, but none of that. It was seamless and painless. So the stuff that I thought was like being mandated by the city or the state or Medicaid or whatever was just Langone being weird. And none of that stuff was necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of this is also tangentially related to trans medicalism, so see episode 60 for more on that, because we can't fight it if you don't know what it is. And although my testosterone is now well below their arbitrary nonsense level, I still haven't been able to free myself of my facial hair forever for reasons outlined in A Pandemic Transition, which there's an essay about at
sillytranstuesdays.com.
Yeah. And they also keep reminding me to get a gynecological exam because while they do have me now listed as a woman in their system, they have no way to denote that I'm a trans woman, despite the fact that, again, they have provided all of my medical transition care, including my gender-affirming speech therapy. See episodes 45 to 47 on Trans Voices for more.
Well, I will at least say in somewhat mildly their defense is that once you've had bottom surgery, you really should have a gynecologist.
Yes, absolutely. But when they're also like, you know, you need to come in for your pap smear. And I'm like, you know, I haven't had bottom surgery. What are you doing? Denote me in your system the correct way. And there is even more Kaiser bureaucracy that just wasn't designed to take the existence of trans people into account. They have digital medical records, one would hope in 2026, that all medical professionals there can access at any time, and which patients can also access at any time. It's really nice, actually. The problem is they have a photo associated with your medical record. I suppose so no one else can say they're you and surreptitiously get treated for a medical issue without paying, the horror. I had honestly forgotten about this for a long time because I hadn't been going to appointments in person for a while when I began medical transition early on during the pandemic. And so I never saw my file and photo up on the computers in the exam room. But during one of my voice therapy sessions, the speech therapist, who I adore, she's the absolute best, listened to my interview with her in episode 47 on Trans Voices 3, remarked that there was a quote-unquote old photo of me in there, and we know exactly what she meant by that. So I went into the Kaiser app, and there's a spot where you can see your virtual insurance card, which you can use in place of the physical one when you need to show it for appointments and such. And sure enough, there was that old photo. Despite specifically going to see if it was there, I was somehow entirely unprepared for seeing that dude again, and it was painful. Dysphoria exploded all over, and it just made me miserable. I needed it gone. And while seeing that dude gives me zero dysphoria now, because I'm so far into my transition that I feel no connection to ever looking like that at all, at the time, that was not the case. It took years for that to happen for me, and for some trans people, it might never happen. Check out episodes 91 and 92 of this show on photos and reflections and photos to the selfie apocalypse for more on that. But what would have happened if I needed to show that virtual insurance card to someone? That was not remotely what I looked like even then. I'd been socially transitioning for almost 6 months longer than I'd been medically transitioning, and by this time, I was over 2 years into my medical transition. If you haven't seen my transition timeline photo, you can see it in the text version of this topic at
TillyStransTuesdays.com.
HRT grew me a whole new face. Even at 2 years in, I looked like an almost entirely different person.
No, yeah, it'll do that. I remember actually about my two years. I remember I posted this early transition and like very early transition, like first month, then 2 year photo, and just highlighted the shocking ways my face had changed because they go in. Man, they do so much to discourage because it's like they're like going, you know, you might experience some fat redistribution and some minimal breast growth. And it's just like, I also grew a whole new face.
Yeah.
My nose shrank. My feet shrank.
My feet shrank too. I lost height too. I lost an inch and a half of height.
I didn't lose any height. If anything, I may have gained a little because one of the ways that my feet shrank is I developed arches for the first time in my life.
That's wild.
Yeah, I was completely flat-footed my whole life, and then now I have prominent arch. Who knew? Weird.
Who knew? Well, they would have never believed that old pre-transition photo of me was the same person, which is actually a great feeling, let me tell you, even if it was causing problems there. So I logged into the website and I noticed there was a spot where I could upload a profile photo. I naively assumed uploading one there would change the one on my medical record, virtual insurance card, but no. So I sent them an email and explained the problem. And they said only the doctor, who was my primary care physician, could change the photo. So I should contact her and ask her to do it. And that seems a weird administrative thing to make a doctor do, but fine. And my doctor said, no, we don't do that. You need to contact administration. And so I go and contact them. I ask if they can just make my web profile photo my medical record insurance card photo. No, impossible, they say. It can't be done. Kaiser then tells me there is no way whatsoever to do what I am asking without me going in person and having someone at a Kaiser facility take my new photo, right in the middle of the Delta wave of a horrid pandemic that killed 1 million Americans. While I'm living with an immunocompromised person, they wanted me to go into a medical facility and remove my mask just to take a photo of me and put my wife's life at risk. Bullshit. So sorry, they said. Company policy. Well, that company policy is discriminatory towards trans people, and I told them so. They had agreed my dysphoria is real and serious and needed medical treatment, but I had to be forced to have said dysphoria worsen every time I opened their app to get care for that very thing? What if I did have to go in person, like to get labs to monitor my hormone levels? One of their employees could see the old photo and think that's not me, and they could refuse to treat me. And then I have to out myself to a stranger and explain how I'm transgender. All because you won't change one effing photo to not only be accurate to who I am, but to alleviate the problem you are treating me for. So after calling them out, all I got was silence for a few days. And then suddenly, I found that the profile photo I'd uploaded to the website had magically replaced the old photo somehow. Oh, dang, what? I thought you couldn't do that. Then they finally wrote back to me and said I had brought up valid concerns, and they apologized, which is actually very nice. They said they were internally addressing the policy, and I hope that was true. I asked them to address it system-wide so that no other trans people who have Kaiser would have to go through the same thing. Maybe some extra good could come of it. And sadly, the exact same nonsense happened when I tried to update my name with them. We had Kaiser via Covered California at the time, which is the state healthcare exchange set up as part of Obamacare. And Kaiser told us to contact Covered California. Covered California told us only Kaiser could change it. I got stuck in that loop for literal months until it was finally fixed. Meanwhile, for 18 months of transition, I had to see my dead name on every medication, every day, multiple times a day.
My PayPal still has my dead name on it.
Oh,
I've been transitioned for 10 years.
Have you tried? Like, will they? Yes, I've tried. Explain why they won't change it?
They just won't. They just won't.
That's so horrible. What the hell?
I don't know. It's a Peter Thiel company, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
It was like a dysphoria bomb in the medicine cabinet. And sure, I could black it out with a marker or whatever, or turn the bottle so I didn't see it, but I would still know why both those things had been done. I'd still know it was there, and being reminded of it meant it was still a problem. So when it finally changed with them and I got the first prescription with my real name on it, I cannot tell you the relief that brought. And all of that is just to show you how every little facet of life can change when you transition, and how so much of the world we live in just isn't at all made to consider trans existence. It all adds up and makes it much tougher for us to just live in this world. For more on how hundreds of little things can become a mountain and a death by a thousand cuts, check out episode 58 on trans microaggressions. If you want to see my pre-transition insurance card and the new one it was updated to, go to the text version of this topic. And do note how, compared to my most recent photo in my transition timeline, I don't exactly look like the person pictured even on the updated card anymore. My face continues to change. Also, hey, look at that poor, miserable egg on the first insurance card. That photo was taken before my egg cracked fully and I accepted I was trans back in 2014. Even though the subconscious signs were always there. And yes, of course, there's an episode on that topic way back in number 6. And then look who was inside all along. Thanks for being here, Mags.
Thanks for having me.
I wish the world made it easier for us to get from A to B. It made it easier to exist after we do all the work to get to point B. We deserve to not be othered by systems that are not designed to account for our existence. You know we're here. Set up your systems to act like it. We are human beings and deserve to be treated with the same respect you show to all cis people. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, on Mastodon at tillybridgesandmastodon.social, and on Insta at heckyeahtillybridges. And you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at AudioJillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. Signed copies of our comics and my book, Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix, are available on my coffee shop at ko-fi.com/Tilly Bridges. If you're listening on YouTube, it's so cliche, but please like and subscribe and take a few seconds to leave a comment. Those feed the algorithm and helps the show be found by so many more people. If you're listening on other platforms, ratings and reviews help just as much, and I'd certainly appreciate them. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.